everyone. Welcome back to Sit Still, Look Opinionated, the podcast. I'm your host, Claire Malky. This week, it really started to feel like fall in Chicago. The weather is starting to cool off, kids are headed back to school in masks, and Target has already sold out of all of its Halloween decorations. To be honest, fall is not my favorite time of year. We just never really vibed, which is kind of awkward seeing as I'm a white girl. Mike, on the other hand, pumpkin spiced everything. I guess we even each other out. But the thing about fall is that it makes me want to start learning and thinking in new ways. I bet it's the same for you. And what better way to do that than by sharing this episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated with a friend? This show is rooted in having conversations. So send the episode over to your pals and get to talking. We've got an awesome show in store for you all today. We'll start with this week's top headlines, then discuss our deep dive, and then we'll close out the show with my interview with co-founder of Vote Simple, Delilah Aga-Utahilly. And you know, we can't start an episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated without a signature margarita. So go grab your drink and let's get started. First, this week's headlines. This week, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio announced an upcoming week-long furlough for roughly 500 mayoral staffers, including himself. To me, this sounds like the perfect setup for a comic book supervillain to take over the city. I can see it now. The evil mastermind in his lair under the streets, while plotting and scheming, he whispers to himself, "And with the mayor away taking a week of unpaid vacation, the city will be mine! Mwahahaha!" Speaking of supervillain setups, reports surfaced that in June, officers requested a heat ray weapon from the National Guard to use against protesters outside the White House. The National Guard was unable to acquiesce their request, as the heat ray was currently checked out by a one Dr. Evil. In fact, at the time of the request, the best they could offer was a freeze ray, a traction beam, and sharks with lasers in their heads. Prisoners out in California continue to struggle as they are now at a high risk of coming into contact with both COVID and the wildfires. I guess you could say they're stuck between something that looks like a rock and a hot place. Earlier this week, scientists found evidence that there could be life on Venus. This comes as a surprise to everyone but myself, who has known since the third grade that girls come from Venus and boys come from Mars. This week, Kamala Harris' shoe saga continues as she wore Timberlands to visit a burn site in California. All this shoe talk has got me thinking about stories that really matter. Like, what shoes are Joe Biden wearing? I mean, he's got to have some sort of arch support, right? And maybe something that's slip-on? If you have any insights or details on this pressing story, please tweet us at Sit Still Podcast. This is breaking news, people! This week, President Trump contradicted CDC Director Redfield, saying a vaccine would be available before the elections. So, to translate, Trump said, "Nope, don't listen to the science," as he stopped believing in science when flying cars and skateboards hadn't been invented like they said they would be in Back to the Future. When talking about COVID death cases, Trump was quoted as saying, "If we don't count the deaths in the blue states, we're doing really well." Yeah, and if I don't count the calories I eat in the daytime, then I'm doing really well too. Fuck what the scale says. I know its only job in life is to measure weight, but it goes against how I want things to be. In other news, Hurricane Sally left parts of Florida and Alabama flooded and without power for thousands of people. But if we don't count people who live in red states, then it wasn't really that bad. The magazine Scientific American made their first ever presidential endorsement in Joe Biden, causing outrage amongst Republicans who vowed to cancel subscriptions to a magazine they never even had. And that was this week's headlines. Up next, this week's deep dive. If you've been in America at all during the last, 7 months, I'm sure you've heard the term voting by mail floating around the news and social media, or flung around for that matter. With COVID-19 still rampant, I'm sure a lot of you, me included, have been wondering, what will the November 2020 elections actually entail? Although I've been an eligible voter for a few years now, when I imagine voting, my brain instantly goes back to my childhood years. Since my elementary school was used as a polling place, we always had the day off for both national and local elections. It was a pretty sweet deal, honestly. We had that polling station cred. But I do think that growing up 20 minutes outside of Washington, D.C. gave me a pretty different perspective on voting, among other political landscapes. It wasn't until I got to college that I learned that not everyone got the day off of school for the presidential inauguration, or that most people didn't even watch it. I once accidentally upstaged one of my college professors when she proudly proclaimed she went to Bill Clinton's first inauguration, and then I nonchalantly mentioned that I attended both of Obama's. Needless to say, accessibility to voting in America is vastly different depending on where you live. In terms of COVID-19, voting by mail seems to be having its celebrity moment. It's getting tons of praise and attention, and conversely, a lot of negative backlash from naysayers. But just like actress Laura Dern, voting by mail didn't just waltz onto the scene in 2019. Similar to how people may not recognize the award-winning actress, voting by mail has actually existed for years. Seriously though, there are people who are now just finding out about National Treasure Laura Dern? Like, hello, Jurassic Park anybody? Ugh, amateurs. Voting by mail is comprised of two aspects, absentee voting and universal vote by mail. Both of these methods of voting are related to the current state of voting and yet have their own intricacies. In a nutshell, absentee voting is available to anyone that, for some reason, can't get to an actual polling place on the day of the election. Sounds simple, right? But it's not that easy. Is anything in this country as easy as it sounds? If you've listened to other episodes so far, you'll know that nothing in the great USA is just a walk in the park, especially if you're bird watching. To participate in absentee voting, you've got to get approved, and the reasons you're allowed to use absentee voting vary from state to state. At the moment, 29 states and the District of Columbia have a no reason option. Personally, I think this option is great. It's like the ultimate excuse. Imagine how much easier it would be to make plans if people were straight up just like, I have no reason to say no, but it's a no anyway. Wow, what a world it would be. It's now my go-to move when people come up to me with clipboards on the sidewalk. On the other end of the voting spectrum, we've got universal mail-in voting. That word, universal, sounds familiar. Maybe from an episode on healthcare or political ideologies? I digress. Anyway, this means all voting, regardless of a global pandemic, takes place via a mailed ballot. There are no polling places in operation for in-person voting. Currently, Washington, Oregon, Colorado, Utah, and Hawaii utilize universal mail-in voting. So if you live in one of those states, your ballot will be in your mailbox no matter what. In any case, despite having different regulations or emotions about mail-in voting, at the time of writing this episode, all 50 states, DC, and all US territories have existing voting by mail capabilities. But state guidelines differ from state to state, as they do with literally everything else. So make sure you check your home turf's guidelines for more information. Also, if you're feeling overwhelmed and don't know where to start looking, check out vote.org. They have voting information about every state, and the webpage is super easy to navigate. Like, if you can order an Uber, you can definitely figure out how to navigate vote.org. That being said, make sure you check the dates when registering to vote by mail. Again, it's not just as straightforward as waiting in line at the polling place. Just to be safe, I'd give yourself 6 weeks or so before the election to get all your ducks in a row, which basically means if you're listening to this episode on the release date, you should probably just pause the episode right now and head straight over to vote.org to make sure you're registered. Just to be safe. Before the disaster that is COVID-19 changed the world as we know it, a lot of Americans actually utilized mail-in voting. People from students studying out of state to expats across the world made good use of the system. In 2016, 23.6% of all voters used some kind of mail-in voting system, whether that was universal vote by mail or absentee ballots. And one of the most wacky things is that statistically, that word is so scientific. Anyway, statistically, no demographic uses voting by mail more than another. However, some groups more heavily rely on voting by mail. Groups like voters with disabilities, elderly voters, and active duty military. Mail-in voting exists for a reason, remember? It didn't just sprout out of nowhere to destroy democracy, even though Trump might like you to believe that. In fact, it emerged from none other than the Civil War. Honestly, it's crazy to me how so much of modern American society was shaped during the 1860s. Apple pie, baseball, systemic racism, you know, American traditions. During the election of 1864, sitting President Abraham Lincoln sought a second term. And yes, Lincoln was a Republican president, but remember our season one episode on Democrats and Republicans? Their platforms were strikingly different back 150 years ago. Keep that in mind anytime a Republican claims that being affiliated with the party of Lincoln means they're not racist. Really? You're the party of Lincoln, but you're defending the Confederate flag? Okay, whatever. Anyway, Lincoln's Democratic opponent, former commander of the Union Army, General George B. McClellan, disagreed with Lincoln's management of the war at hand. This was a heated election cycle. Well, they all are. This is America, after all. But by August of 1864, it was looking really bad for Lincoln. Like, he was about ready to throw in the towel. When his Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, introduced the framework for absentee balloting. This way, soldiers on the front could still participate in the vote, even if they couldn't get home from the front lines. Something Lincoln thought was a necessary right, even though he was aware that the people he was helping vote would most likely vote him out. And voila, mail-in voting was born. 25 states then quickly adopted the absentee ballot system into law. If you're wondering why only 25 states, remember the other 11 states seceded from the Union to create a whole new country with an economy based around enslaving people to drive profits. But back to history. As the summer of 1864 progressed, the Union Army gained traction when General Sherman captured Atlanta, and the Union finally got the boost they needed. With this victory, Lincoln was able to win over the soldiers' support and ultimately won in a landslide. That being said, Lincoln's insistence to give all eligible voters the opportunity to vote gave him the presidential seat. Think about that for a second. Lincoln was rewarded for fighting to preserve the right to vote, even though he thought it meant he would lose. Meanwhile, we have a president who seeks to obstruct the ability to vote for a chance to win. Also, quick caveat there, eligible voters at the time were only white men. Suffrage for Black Americans didn't come until the 15th Amendment in 1870, and women's suffrage didn't happen until the 19th Amendment in 1920. So, why is all of this suddenly an issue? Well, to put it simply, Trump, using his favorite method of gaslighting. Donald Trump and his Republican counterparts turned the USPS and voting by mail into an issue. I know what you're thinking. What? No, it can't be. I didn't even see this coming. Kaiser Soze moment. Ocean's 11 ending reveal. Pikachu surprised face meme. Bum, bum, bum. But why are they targeting the mail? Well, like Mr. DNA in Jurassic Park, let me show you. Or tell. Let me tell you. We're a podcast. Trump's target against voting by mail essentially boils down to two things. One, Republicans believe it will affect their chances of winning. And two, Trump and Republicans want to privatize the post office. Let's break each one down separately. A New York Times article that was published in May of this year states that conventional wisdom points to a surge in mail-in voting would lead to a Democratic advantage in November. The thought process goes like this. Traditionally, Republicans are older and, as such, have more traditional values, and so they tend to turn out to the polls at higher rates, whereas many Democratic voters are younger and more likely to skip the polls altogether. But with the ability to vote by mail, more Democratic voters will be likely to cast a vote from the comfort of their own homes. Plus, there is a growing consensus that the majority of new voters tend to lean Democratic, hypothetically compounding these numbers. For Republicans, this fear distilled would mean the more people who vote, the less chance we have to win. And the way to get around that is simple, voter suppression, which in itself is a whole nother episode that we'll focus on later in the season. But the logic still stands. However, here's the thing. According to research, voting by mail does not particularly benefit one party or another. Lee Drutman from 538 put it this way. In short, voting by mail is more convenient for some voters, but more difficult for others. And these conflicting factors appear to cancel each other out, dampening any partisan advantage. Moreover, the vast majority of non-voters don't participate not because it's too inconvenient to vote, but because voting isn't a habit for them. Secondly, Trump and Republicans are actively looking to shut down the post office. Not only would shutting down the post office help deter the use of mail-in voting, But the post office, by design, is a public service, and as such, does not generate profit for the government. Because remember, guys, the government was built off of profitization. It's times like these when I remember my favorite quote in the Constitution.
Make the people compete against the market and promise to value money over humanity. And if my neighbor is struggling with finances, then sucks for them and they should have gotten a real job.
Being real for a second, Republicans have been laser focused on things that don't make a profit regardless of its inherent benefits. So how do you justify getting rid of something that helps people? You make the case that it's not helping people and is operating poorly. With the rise of the internet and the drop in letter mail, Republicans saw their opportunity to strike. I want to say I'm aware right now, I'm making Republicans sound like these big bad guys, but it's really just a fact that no Democrat is seeking to abolish the post office. Nevertheless, I shall persist. Several articles by the Washington Post have chronicled Congress' attempt to sabotage the post office, including requiring all pensions for new hires be pre-funded, which is highly unusual, and requires the redistribution of funds from operations to employees who will not have access to their pensions for some time. On top of that, Trump disregarded any candidates with experience and instead appointed another major campaign donor as Postmaster General. Under his lack of leadership, he permanently denied all future overtime requests and issued a memo throughout the institution to purposely slow down the process of delivering mail. I'm being serious here, like Google it. After taking these actions to purposely break down the institution, Republicans then turn around and point to its shortcomings and say, "Look, see? This institution is faulty. This wouldn't happen if it ran under a for-profit structure." Which, like, that's the equivalent of you giving someone a car and then them stabbing the tires and saying the car doesn't drive well. The car drives fine if you just stop stabbing the fucking tires. Okay, Claire, but still, besides from voting purposes, why does it matter if the post office fails? We still have UPS and FedEx and Amazon. Do we really need the post office? Well, the USPS quietly makes our modern lives a lot better, even if it's not handling the vast majority of our correspondence. According to an article written in 2018, the USPS, through its legal mandate to deliver the mail everywhere regardless of geographical or logistical difficulty, contracts with private delivery companies like UPS, FedEx, and Amazon to fulfill deliveries for the last mile, or the final step from distribution center to the customer. Without the USPS handling that last mile, the cost for packaging to non-urban areas would significantly increase, or mail would simply not be delivered to areas deemed unprofitable. I can only imagine that without the post office, those companies would have to raise their prices to remain profitable. Are you prepared for your Amazon Prime membership to quadruple? Alexa's already sassy as hell, just wait until she has that rich teenager mentality. On top of that, post offices often serve as rural community centers. More than half of the people who get life-saving medications delivered to them are over the age of 65. And many rural areas that are already deemed too small to open polling places near them would be unable to vote at all. In fact, in the last few weeks, there have been an increasing number of articles about veterans dying after waiting to receive their mail-in medications for more than 6 weeks. If you understand the ins and outs of the voting system, you're more likely to participate. And all of the details above are necessary to understand when trying to figure out why voting by mail has turned into such a hot-button issue. When you think about it, anything that could drastically affect the lives of Americans is an issue. Kind of circling back to why politics is so emotional. Insert star wipe transition here. We did some research on how to register for a mail-in ballot, meaning we ourselves registered to vote by mail. We operate out of Chicago here at the Sit Still Studio, so we only have experience from this one city. But a lot of the information tracks. Again, if you have questions about your state or municipality, check out vote.org. If you live in Chicago, you can register for your mail-in ballot at chicagoelections.gov/en/early-voting.html. Yeah, it's in the show notes. We got you. I don't expect you to listen to me spell out the web address and have you take it down. We're not ordering Gap jeans over the phone in 1998. Once you get to the site, there will be a hyperlink that says, "Apply online now to vote by mail." Click that and it'll walk you through all the steps. Which, you're smart. You're listening to your favorite podcast, so you'll figure it out. And remember, this is important. You must register to vote before October 29th, 2020. I threw the year in there in case you forgot. I understand hearing it can be a little triggering for some people. And if for whatever reason you dilly-dally on this quick online process, you can call the elections office at 312-269-7967. They'll be able to help you. But that phone number is only a fail-safe. Please, please help me sleep at night and register to vote. It's so quick and you can do it in less than 5 minutes. Another cool thing about Chicago is you can vote by mail with that no reason excuse. That's like the cherry on top. Again, this only applies to Chicago, but I guarantee these sites exist everywhere. You can tell your page is legit if it has the .gov included in the URL. If it has .org or .com, it might be helpful info, but you can't register to vote on one of those sites. Now, recently on social media, I've been seeing this post about how instead of popping your ballot into a blue USPS box, you should hand deliver your ballot to the supervisor of elections in your area. I did some digging into this just to make sure it was a real thing. Wow, I'm basically an Agatha Christie detective. As much as I want to trust these precious blue boxes, I've been seeing those tweets and Insta stories, just like I'm sure you have, with pictures of USPS boxes being removed from communities. I can't tell if I'm heartbroken or terrified. Probably some cocktail of the two. With those tweets in mind, I was relieved to read that you can, in fact, drop off a mail-in ballot to a secured drop box. They're located at every early voting site. These sites are not always synonymous with polling places. At the time of writing this episode, the city of Chicago hasn't disclosed those locations yet, but you sure as hell know I'll be making a cute Insta deck with all the locations once they're released. Reminder that our Instagram is @sitstill_lookopinionated. Give us a follow while you're at it, but register to vote first. Another pro tip. Make sure you bring your ballot return envelope with you to the early voting site when you drop off your mail-in ballot. You have to timestamp it. And finally, you must drop off your ballot between October 14th and November 3rd. In times like these, I found the words of American playwright David Ives imperative. It's all in the timing. Oh, were we going to do it? Were we going to do a joke there?
I mean, I was trying to emphasize the point.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I'm going to go back to recording the podcast.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Cool. Personally, I'm going to drop off my ballot at one of these secured boxes because it seems like the way I can make the most of my vote. But I totally understand this isn't really an option for everyone. Whether it's an issue of transportation or health risks, some people will have to mail in their ballots. In this case, if you are going to mail in your ballot, make sure you mail it in with plenty of time to be counted and processed. Even if you do drop it in the mail on October 31st, it could still be postmarked after November 3rd, which is not ideal. So give yourself an extra week or so and make sure you mail in your ballot, if that's your only option, by Saturday, October 24th, 2020. Once more, this info pertains to Chicago residents, but should track with your local municipalities. Just be sure to double check your local .gov websites. They'll have the most up-to-date info and protocols. And carefully read over the fine print because that's usually where they place the stuff that matters. Up next, our interview with co-founder of Vote Simple, Delilah Agouutahili. All right, so for today's interview, we have Delilah Agouutahili. She is the National Field Director for Win Justice and the co-founder of Vote Simple. Thank you so much for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated.
Thanks for having me. Excited to chat.
Yeah, I'm super interested to hear about your expertise and your knowledge around voting by mail. So to get us started with that, can you give us a little bit of your background and tell us a little bit about you?
For sure. I'm from Houston, currently in Houston, got my start in politics here. So actually in high school, interned on a congressional race. I was a high school debater to where we always debated political topics. Really piqued my interest in politics from participating in debate. And there was a congressional campaign that had an office across the street from my high school. So a number of us volunteered there, but I enjoyed that so much that I took a year off after my senior year of interning on this race to work two other campaigns before going to college. So kind of been a campaign nomad the last several years. Last year was Beto's state director here in Texas for his presidential, and in 2018 was Stacey Abrams' field director in Georgia. And currently working with Win Justice, a collaboration with SEIU, Planned Parenthood, Color Change, and Community Change, running their national field program. So I've worked a lot of campaigns across the country and really enjoy organizing and getting people to vote.
Yeah. Thank you. That is such an interesting story and hearing all of your different experience. So you talked a little bit about Vote Simple and Win Justice. Can you talk a little bit about what those specific organizations do and what you do with them?
For sure, yeah. So I didn't mention before I went to work for Stacey, I worked with Battleground Texas, an organization, Texas-based organization focused on youth voter registration and voter engagement. I was there for about a year as the deputy field director, really just registering lots of college students to vote and then making sure that they turn out to vote in like local elections, because it was, you know, between 2016 and 2017, but we still had a lot of municipal races we were working around. And then in 2016, prior to that, I did a lot of voter registration with the Florida Democratic Party for Hillary's campaign. So for my background with voter registration, honestly, just recognize this gap in Texas, a gap, I think, in like the digital space. In Texas, we make everything more difficult than it needs to be. But we don't have online voter registration or automatic voter registration. So we found a company that was kind of circumventing that process, where they have an online form. And if you fill out the form, they print that form to you and then mail it to you so that you sign it. Because in Texas, you need a wet signature for that form to be processed. And they also include a postage paid envelope for you to mail it back. So we are working with this company. The website they use is registertovote.com. But we are running digital ads targeting people of color, young people, queer people to register through this form. Because in Texas, so like not only is there a gap, I think, Texas is huge, is the size of, you know, many states could fit into Texas several times. But we estimate we have about 4 million Texans who could be registered to vote that are not registered to vote, and over half of them are people of color. So like, despite these efforts of groups like Battleground that I worked with, doing great on the ground work, engaging youth voters, getting them, you know, involved in the electoral process, there's still like this huge gap in who's not registered and who's not voting. Over 70% of our voter rolls is comprised of white people, despite the fact that we are a majority minority state. So Vote Simple is really, really just seeing what we can do online to target folks to get them to use this form, hopefully making registering to vote a little easier, hence our name. Because I also don't know how many people have like stamps and envelopes at home if they were to get a form from like a post office or a county clerk's office. So, but that is what Vote Simple is doing. And I think that this was actually something myself and our other two founders thought about doing late last year. We didn't get the ball rolling on it until earlier this summer. But we're in the middle of a pandemic, right? Where in-person voter registration is also more difficult now than we anticipated it would be while we were thinking about Vote Simple. But it just makes it also, you know, this is like prime time for something like this to really expand in Texas and help our like engagement efforts.
Mm-hmm. Has the pandemic really, have you seen a difference in voter registration because of the pandemic?
Yeah, I just think there's a lot of, you know, it's really effective to register people in person.
Yeah.
So like whether you are tabling on a college campus or outside a grocery store, at a festival or a fair. So I just think that, you know, this like new normal that we're adjusting to kind of eliminates a lot of those opportunities. Some folks are still tabling, maybe, you know, in public places with PPE in a safe way, but they still don't have that same, the traffic, right? That of people going in and out of places that was happening before the pandemic. So I think that can be made up online. I think some people are trying to also, you know, see what can be done if we just like send out mass mailers of voter registration forms. But I think all of it helps and will ultimately, you know, diversify our electorate. But I think we should be doing a little bit of everything. And because I think this in a state that doesn't have digital voter registration, investing in paid media is not the first thing people gravitate to, but it's been going well.
Well, that's amazing to hear. And it sounds like an awesome project. And I hope that more people do get registered, especially people of color and people that aren't represented as much, because
yes,
that is a huge part of this country. And something that, you know, I am trying to help my friends and family understand is that we all have to work together to get this vote out. Yes. So in the media and in everything that's been going on, there's been a lot of questioning of voting by mail via the pandemic, via things that, you know, the government has been saying. What are your thoughts on voting by mail? What is your opinion about it?
Yeah, that's it. It's definitely something that is all over the media, which I think is great. I think voting by mail is easy. Voting by mail is safe. I think it's very accessible. And I think in states, you know, that because of this world that we're in right now, that are sending out ballots to every registered voter or sending out applications to every registered voter, I think that they're really honestly like warriors of democracy right now. Because I, you know, in a world where maybe voting in person is not the most safe thing, we should make it easier in our country for folks to vote. I voted by mail once in 2018, actually, when I was in Georgia working for Stacey Abrams. I'm gonna be honest with you, Claire, it wasn't the best experience. I requested, so in Texas, we have to request our ballot if you are out of state. So we are an excuse state too. So that's the other, there are some states, right, that have all these parameters around whether or not you can vote by mail, which I think only, you know, is really there to, again, decrease the accessibility of vote by mail. But I was, you know, I was physically in Atlanta, a registered voter in Texas, so I could not go to Houston to vote. Requested my ballot, I think, the last week before the deadline. But I got my ballot, Claire, on election day. And, like, working this election, I honestly, too, I had a friend who I gave my keys. And I was like, could you please check my mailbox? Because, like, I can't leave work. Like, it's election day. But I have to vote. And I was freaking out about whether or not I would be able to vote. But my ballot came in. So it was there on election day and I filled it out and I actually ran to a FedEx and overnighted it on election day. So I paid like $40 to vote in 2018. But, you know, it got there in time and I was able to confirm that it was counted on the county clerk's website. So while that wasn't a great experience, and maybe I could have requested my ballot earlier, I would think that vote by mail might look a little different this year because, you know, state government, county governments are making it easier by sending out those applications automatically or sending out ballots automatically, which is great. But I also think that, you know, in a world where we make anything more accessible, more people will be engaged. And I think at the end of the day, we should always want more people voting. I could tell another story quickly. I was doing some work in Baltimore earlier this year with the mayoral election, working with Brandon Scott, who's now the Democratic nominee for mayor. And, you know, in Baltimore, they postponed the primary and they ended up making the primary. They sent ballots to every active voter. So they had like this unprecedented turnout in the middle of a pandemic that they didn't think would happen. I think over 160,000 people voted. They were estimating about 100,000 people to vote, on par with like the last mayoral elections. And only, I think, you know, about 7,000 or 8,000 of those folks voted in person. So the majority of them voted by mail, but they voted by mail because, you know, they opened their mailbox and got a ballot in the mail and they could just fill it out and drop it back in the mail or drop it in a drop box somewhere nearby. So I think that examples like that just illustrate, again, that if we remove some of these barriers, we could really increase our participation levels. And I think the more people who are participating, the more reflective our electorate is of the actual population, like the better our elections will be.
Yeah, that's super interesting to hear the two different sides of that coin, that, you know, it might have still been a tough experience. But at the same time, you also have experience working on a mayoral election. And I also find that interesting because it's on every election, regardless of if it's a national election or a local election. And I think that's really interesting, too, especially because a lot of things are happening about, you know, the presidential election. But elections are happening a lot more often than I think people realize.
Yep. Yep. They are. I would agree. There's, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people are fully aware of the presidential every 4 years and maybe of the midterm every 2 years, but it's, you know, it's like there's municipal elections sprinkled in some places is, you know, every year.
Along with voting by mail, there's the voter side of it. Do you have an opinion that you feel comfortable sharing about the post office and everything that's going on that end?
Oh, do I have an opinion? Yes. Do I have an opinion that's not like Donald Trump is trying to steal the election? No. And that is my thoughts on the post office, you know, because it's very telling why we all of a sudden 70 days out, you know, sorry, I missed the countdown, but somewhere around 70 days out from Election Day, we are having problems with the post office when a majority of states across the country are expanding vote by mail for voters. So, I think it's really unfortunate. I hope we can, you know, figure it out before the election. And I think if we don't, I hope that, you know, voters don't have to risk their lives to vote in person.
Yeah. So circling back to voting by mail and all the ins and outs of it, why should our listeners care about voting by mail? Why is this an issue that people should be taking into consideration and learning all they can about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be pretty apparent, right, that in a world where folks are trying to make it harder to vote by mail, I think we should recognize that like there's some power in it, right? I think that voting by mail is more readily accessible in most states this election than it ever was before, and honestly than it ever maybe we come out of this pandemic. But I also think it's safe and it's easy and it's a great way to vote. You know, you can grab a piece of mail from your mailbox, fill out the ballot in your home, drop it back in the mailbox without ever having to really go anywhere. When I think about voting in person and whether that's like, you know, getting in my car, finding my ID, driving to a polling location, making sure a polling location is open, maybe waiting in line if there is a line, you don't have to think about any of those things if you vote by mail. So it's really tailored, you know, to being an efficient way for anyone's, you know, lifestyle. And I think folks should take advantage of it if they are able to vote by mail.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This has been so informative, and I feel like our listeners are really going to appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
That's today's show. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments about today's episode, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at sitstill_lookopinionated and on Twitter at sitstillpodcast. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and written by myself, Claire Malky, and Michael Dritto. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter. Research by Ross Black. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. See you next week. Bye.